Spirit Blade Underground, episode 379. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 379.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, though, a review of the Maze Runner Scorch Trials movie, and plus some, I don't know what you would want. I was going to say conversation, but I guess with just the one of me here, I can maybe start the conversation about what geeks should think about their future as we continue in the book of Hebrews. All right, here we go. Maze Runner, The Scorch Trials. Now, I haven't read any of these books, but I did see the first movie and I enjoyed it, so I was looking forward to this next one. Let me tell you just a little bit about it. Basically, if you've seen the first one, they were running around in this maze, waking up with amnesia, these kind of young adult, kind of kid, late teen, mid-teen kind of kids, and they don't know why they're there. They've lost their memory and stuff like that. Well, eventually they kind of, I don't want to spoil that movie, but I did do a review on it, so if you check around, snoop around on this channel, then you can find that one. But anyway, they get their way out of the maze, the survivors of the first movie, and they start gaining some of their memory back and learning a little bit about why they were there, but still the details are very foggy. Now they are free of that, and they are seeking shelter with this other group that, you know, it's like, hey, come with us. We're against those people that put you in the maze. But yet there's something shady going on with them that they can't quite figure out. And pretty soon, you know, it's got Runner in the title, so they're on the run again before long. So this movie basically is like a middle chapter in maybe a trilogy, a quadrilogy. I don't know how many books there are or how many movies there are going to be, but it definitely feels like that kind of middle chapter with a lot of the pitfalls that come with that, you know. There's very little new info given regarding the overarching plot of the entire series. And what info is provided is given in like these little quick spurts and separated by numerous scenes that don't advance the overall plot of the series. And so, you know, it didn't have the same kind of pace. The first movie had this great sense, I thought, of tension as things were slowly revealed, especially regarding the threat that they were facing. In this one, it's just a different kind of movie. It doesn't have that kind of slow reveal of the threat. It's more of like a very slow reveal of what's going on, you know. But keeping the audience and the characters in the dark doesn't add to the tension like it did in the first movie. So it just ends up feeling a bit slow at times. It's slower and less tense. It lacks the fear of the unknown that was a big part, I thought, of the first movie, and that's basically replaced by zombie-type creatures and cheap jump scares. There is a little bit of fear of the unknown as they kind of have these zombies chasing them in the dark and stuff like that, but still, I think a lot of times they're relying on these jump scares. I'm like, hey, that zombie totally should have not been waiting until that moment to suddenly jump. They were in the room, they were making noise, that zombie should have jumped at him, but no, they wait until a moment that is convenient for the scene that they are trying to set up to have the zombie suddenly jump from out of nowhere, you know? I think kind of like the ninja zombies that a friend of mine talked about in one of the recent seasons of Walking Dead. The dialogue and the story points feel copied and pasted from a large collection of movie scripts, you know? I couldn't point to like, oh, this movie says this line and this movie says this line. But as you're watching this, it just kind of feels like I've heard all these lines of dialogue before, like many, many times. And it's like someone like a kidnapper that's cutting up newspaper clippings to paste together a message. It's like they did that with scripts throughout the history of Hollywood, and they pasted together all the dialogue and some of the major like kind of plot points for this one. So it just kind of felt very familiar. The characters also had very little to differentiate them from each other. They all kind of were motivated by the same thing. It's like, we want to live, we want to survive, we want safety, you know? But as far as their individual personalities, they weren't standing out from each other. And so it was difficult to kind of, I guess, care about anybody, because you didn't really understand what made them tick, what they cared about the most, and what it would mean to them if they didn't get that, you know? The fact that they were all kind of running to survive and stuff like that, I mean, that's not something that we can really relate to. And I think if they were really in this situation, then their emotions would be much more heavy and dark and extreme, but it's not that kind of movie. It's based on a young adult property. It's aimed at probably largely the same audience, although I do think there's a good amount of crossover for people that aren't into young adult novels. So the cast in this movie was, you know, the returning cast from the first film, with a few other new characters added to the mix. The performances were all solid, but they had little to work with in the script, I felt. At this point, I think all these actors are probably being underused, because they would have these little moments like, oh man, that actor's emotional access in the scene is really good, and I'm really just kind of buying into this moment. But in the context of the story, the characters are still kind of making choices that don't make a ton of sense, or that they don't seem properly motivated. They're just not very complex. So, you know, that was a little bit of a bummer there. There are some really cool and creepy monsters / zombie designs. They're not technically zombies, but I mean, they have a lot in common with zombies, so I'm just going to call them zombies. But they're a little bit modified in terms of what they look like from normal zombies. There's not really blood involved. It's a PG-13 movie, but they got black crud coming out of their eye sockets and their mouths and stuff like that, you know. So it's just different enough from traditional zombies to be like, ooh, this is weird, this is creepy, you know. And then later on, as you see kind of what happens when these zombies kind of fully evolve into their full-on diseased zombie form, it's a visual concept that I'm like, that is jacked up, you know. So I really enjoyed that. I was really creeped out by that. But by the time they get to that point, they're using full CG to represent these creatures. And so the last major kind of zombie action sequence uses full CG zombies chasing the actors, and that took me completely out of the reality of the moment, and constantly was sucking the tension out of those scenes, which is a real bummer for me. That might not be a problem for a lot of people. I'm just cursed with an eye that picks out CGI really easily, especially when it's in motion and it's supposed to be imitating something biological as opposed to like machine type stuff, which is what they had a lot more of in the first movie. So anyway, is there anything of like a particular philosophical or moral relevance in this movie that's being touched on or treated in such a way that it's going to stimulate thought or conversation potentially? I don't think so, at least not intentionally. There's probably very little intended in terms of moral, philosophical themes. But my mind went to the idea of submission. You know, this story and many other young adult stories share a common thread of not trusting authority figures. And that, you know, I think that's appropriate. You know, we should always look at our authority figures and say, I'm not sure if I can trust this person, and constantly be discerning that, you know. I don't think we want to get into the place where we're like, oh, this politician will surely save us, you know, because they're not going to do it. but they go to the point of actually rebelling instead of submitting against authority, submitting to authority, excuse me. And I think that, you know, that's something that we ought to be on guard against, is being really quick to rebel against authority. It's one thing to question authority. It's one thing to not trust authority necessarily. But I think there are many authority forms that much of the time, the majority of the time, we should be at least submitting to and even trusting, you know. As a believer, disobeying authority is appropriate when that authority commands an action that would be sin. Okay, that's when it's appropriate to rebel, disobey authority. But in all other cases, we are actually to submit to our governing authorities. We might not like them, we might not trust them all the time, but unless if they're not commanding us to sin, we are to submit to our authorities and to each other. And we see that in Romans chapter 13 and also in Ephesians chapter 5. But you know, big Hollywood movies, they don't make movies about submitting to our employers and submitting to the speed limit and submitting to copyright law and submitting to our spouses, because who likes to think about doing any of that? We want to do what we want to do. And when we focus on the flaws in people or laws that are in authority over us, then it helps us feel kind of justified in rebelling against them. So we like stories about corrupt leadership, because then we can go to our job or to our home and say, yeah, I'm being mistreated, blah, 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 blah. You know, I should, you know, just rebel against the way my boss wants me to stack these things on the retail shelf. I'm going to do it the way I've always done it, blah, 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 you know, whatever. But those of us who believe in the Bible shouldn't be looking for reasons to rebel or to defy. We should be looking to submit as much as possible, provided it does not cause us to sin in any way. Okay, so in summary, if I were a time traveler and I were to go back in time and talk to myself, I'd say, Peter, hey, skip this one. Skip it until you've watched the trailer for the third movie in this series. If the third movie looks good based on the trailer, then watch this one to catch up so you can be in the know for that third movie. But otherwise, it's not worth it. It's rated PG-13 for extended sequences of violence and action, some thematic elements, substance use, and language. You know, I haven't been using my my scoring system for a little while. I wanted to see if anybody would notice. Nobody brought anything up to me except for one person that I happened to bring up and mention that I'm not using the review system anymore. So let me know if you want these numbers. Some people like numbers, but I've kind of ditched them because I don't like to have to like justify and you know, in this quantifiable way, you know, why I give this a number value and something like that. They're just kind of like, this is not a mathematical process for me. It's just kind of like what I'm feeling, you know? So when you're talking about what you're feeling and then trying to put a number to that, you know, it's really kind of weird. But anyway, if I were to try and score this, I'd give it a quality score of 7.5 out of 10. That's like a C letter grade. And if I were to give it a relevant score, I'd give it a 6.0 out of 10, which is like a D. All right, so those are my thoughts. I want to remind you guys to go check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, and POSTOS. For more info about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. And lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
In this segment, I attempt to examine the Bible and dissect some of what I would call the churchy language that we usually take for granted, digging into history and languages when I'm able to try and get at the heart of the text so we can hopefully see and apply some of what God has for us in these words today. Now, I'm not formally trained in Scripture, just a guy using resources and a questioning mind to try and get at the truth, and I hope you'll do that with me. This time, we're continuing our look at the book of Hebrews. We're at chapter 11 now, looking at verses 17 through 22, which in the ESV reads, "By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, 'Through Isaac shall your offspring be named.' He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. By faith, Isaac invoked future blessings on Jacob and Esau. By faith, Jacob, when dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. By faith, Joseph, at the end of his life, made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave directions concerning his bones." All right, well, beginning with the example of Abraham, the author of Hebrews has begun specifically highlighting that aspect of faith that trusts in the future blessings God promises his people. This was something that I just recently kind of noticed as we were going through this here. That's why I didn't mention it previously. You can look back and see this subtle shift beginning, I think, at verse 8. And once again, this fits into the context of the rest of the book of Hebrews, much of which I've summarized here as holding on to hope and confidence in Yahweh so that we can be engaged in his plans and experience his blessing and rest.
And although we can begin to experience the blessings and rest of Yahweh in this life, the fullness of blessing and rest is a promised reward for the future, given in response to our trust of Yahweh during this life. And I think we see that in Hebrews chapter 6, verses 7, and then also 11 and 12, and then also chapter 10 of Hebrews, verse 35, and then 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 11 through 15. The author presents Abraham and many more after him, which we'll see, you know, when we come back to this this chapter next time, presents Abraham and many more after him as those who trusted that God will do in the future what he has said previously he will do. Verses 17 and 19 now. After making some general statements about faith that applied to several of the people mentioned in this chapter, the author of Hebrews brings the focus back to Abraham. The story of Abraham offering up his son Isaac as a sacrifice can be found in Genesis 22. God asked Abraham to kill his only son and give him up as a burnt offering. And this isn't in my notes, but you might remember when we looked at this story as we were going through the book of, you know, kind of like the highlights of the book of Genesis, that Dr. Paul Copan argues that the language there indicates that God, this was a request from God. It was not a command. He was requesting, he was asking Abraham to trust him with this. Will you please do this for me? Will you take your son? Please take your son. And so that seems to be the language, the nature of the language there. I can't imagine, I can't even imagine what was going through Abraham's mind in addition to the horrifying thought of killing his own son. He must have been very confused by this request in addition to the horror of the idea of killing his son. In the Old Testament time period, it was the religions surrounding God's people that sacrificed their children to their gods. It's a practice that Israel eventually imitated, but that Yahweh hated. And we see that in Ezekiel chapter 16, verses 20 and 21, and again in Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 31. This was going on in the ancient world, but Yahweh was not in support of this. He hated this, and it was cause for judgment against the nation of Israel when Israel took up these kinds of practices and imitated the nations around them. God had also promised that through Isaac, Abraham would have more descendants. We see that in verse 21, verse 12. So that, in my mind, would just add to the confusion. Okay, this is like, first, this is out of character for God to be asking me to do this. But then also, how is Isaac going to be the one through whom my descendants are named if he dies before having any children? And I think the answer is that Abraham assumed that God could raise Isaac from the dead to make good on his promise. And although that's not literally how it played out, Abraham trusted, though, that God was powerful enough and wise enough to make it all work out the way he had promised. You know, Abraham didn't know how it would all happen, but he trusted that God could do it. Looking at verses 20 through 22 now, the messy story of Isaac blessing his sons Jacob and Esau is found in Genesis chapter 27. Isaac was nearing death, and his senses, at least his sight, possibly his hearing as well, his senses were failing him. He intended to bless his firstborn, Esau, and Jacob evidently knew this, the younger of the two, I mean, just by like moments, they were twins. So Jacob disguised himself as Esau and intercepted the blessing. So maybe they were, maybe, that's interesting. I don't know why I assumed that they were fraternal twins, but I guess maybe you could assume that because, you know, Esau's described differently, you know, as far as like the hair on his arms and stuff like that. So maybe that's probably why I haven't thought of them as identical. But then I thought, well, maybe if they were identical, then that's how he would get their voices confused. But at the end of the day, that's, you know, I think there's room for his hearing to be failing him as well. So anyway, that's a weird rabbit trail. I don't know why I just off onto that. But anyway, Jacob disguised himself as Esau to intercept this blessing that this or at least this time of blessing that Isaac was going to give to Esau. It's a story that raises a lot of questions for me, and I just wanted to go into this rabbit trail just for a little bit in case these thoughts were on your mind as we were looking at this as well. It's not super relevant to what the author of Hebrews is pulling from this, but I thought it would just be just a little teeny tiny brief detour. But yeah, this story does raise a lot of questions for me. You know, what exactly was this kind of blessing? Did Isaac like somehow have the authority to make these proclamations about what was going to happen to Jacob and Esau? You know, did he in some way cause or conjure, you know, these events? I don't think as believers we would use the word conjure, but I mean, was he given this ability by God? You know, I mean, that's certainly not something that I've seen as we dive into like the spiritual gifts that are common among believers that are described in the New Testament. Or maybe did Isaac have a gift of prophecy that was maybe in the mix here, so that as he was blessing his sons, he was able to make statements about their future that God had given to him to say in that moment, in a prophetic sense, not only prophetic in the sense that it being God's words for the moment, which is really that's in broad strokes, that's what prophecy always falls under, is this category of these are words for the moment. That are provided by God to someone. And we often think of them as these futuristic predictions, but that's only like one type of prophecy. In fact, I think last time I kind of read on kind of a survey of prophecy, I think the vast majority is not predictive prophecy. I guess that gets into the category of, do you think is scripture itself prophecy? Never mind. Blah, 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 blah. Man, I'm like all rabbit trailing. And I only intended to do one legitimate rabbit trail today. So anyway, I do tend to think that the latter, that Isaac had a gift of prophecy that was in the mix here. Despite Jacob's deception, you know, the Holy Spirit knew who Isaac was really talking to. The Holy Spirit knew that it was Jacob there pretending to be Esau. And so I think what happens here is that the Holy Spirit ensured that the blessings and the prophecies that were given through Isaac reflected the person that was actually standing in front of Isaac. And that if Esau would have been there, you know, it would have been something different, some other kinds of statements that Isaac would have made inspired by the Spirit. But using words like if, could, would, maybe when it comes to God, you know, there's only one way things were going to go as far as God's perspective. So I don't know. It's weird to talk about all this kind of stuff. It's really hard. But anyway, so At the end of the day, you know, like, and this is another just kind of side note, you know, Jacob was blessed and used by God despite his sin. It's not that God was tricked in this instance, and like, oh, there goes the blessing slipped out. I mean, no. I mean, the Holy Spirit was fully aware of what was going on. And I think what we see happening here is what happens all over in Scripture, and that is that God blesses and uses people that are sinful and dysfunctional, in spite of their character. Now, getting back to the author of Hebrews, though, what I think they're highlighting is the fact that Isaac trusted Yahweh so much that he had a certainty about the future of his sons. Jacob seems to have developed a similar faith and gifting as he blessed his own grandsons in a similar way. And we see those in Genesis chapter 47, verse 31. And then in all of chapter 48 after that is the story of Jacob blessing Joseph's sons. Joseph likewise trusted in God's promises, including his promise that the land of Canaan belonged to Israel as an inheritance. And with this in mind, he told his sons that they would return there someday after he had died, which Israel did many years later during the Exodus. And as requested, they took the bones of Joseph with them. And so we see all that in Genesis 50, verses 24 and 25, Exodus 13, verse 19, and Joshua 24, verse 32. So we're looking at this now, and the question I always try to ask myself as I'm prepping this for you guys and for the CGC community is, you know, what's in this for geeks? Well, I guess I would start by saying, and this is not just for geeks in particular, but I think it's worth noting, is that, you know, since we don't know what these men experienced that made it clear and obvious that they were hearing from God, we should be very hesitant to assume that we are hearing from God when we feel a particular conviction about something. And I guess as an aside, not in my notes, that I would say for geeks is that I think there's maybe a little extra longing in geeks for us to feel specially gifted, specially equipped, or to maybe even be supernaturally empowered in some way. You know, I mean, we read so many stories about people that, like, they are the chosen person for this moment in history, and they are specially gifted or equipped, or they have superpowers, or, you know, whatever the thing is. You know, there's just something special about them that makes them the person for the moment, you know, to bring about the good of, you know, of whatever's going on. And I think, you know, that really resonates with us, and we want that too. We want to believe that about ourselves. We want to believe that God would choose to speak to us directly, that we would hear his voice, or that we would get these kind of indications in our lives that, like, this is God, this is what I'm supposed to do. I mean, that resonates with me. And I'm not saying that God does not do that ever today. But I think that we ought to be really careful, because all of us, and I think especially geeks, we want to be special. We want to feel special. We want to feel singled out. And so I think we should be aware of that as we're trying to discern, okay, what is God saying to me, if anything, right now? I think we should be very hesitant, as my notes, I'll get back into them, say, to be very hesitant to assume that we're hearing from God when we feel a particular conviction about something. The author of Hebrews is not saying that, you know, that predicting the future or pronouncing blessings is evidence that your faith is strong. That's not, I don't think, why these guys are listed in this kind of, like, heroes of faith list here. And yet these men are presented as models of faith. So what aspect of their characters should we imitate? Well, the common thread that I see running through these models is one of trusting the future to Yahweh. Despite the messes that these guys lived in, the tragedies they experienced, the family dysfunction, I mean, oh my gosh, it's a mess. Despite all of that being their status quo, they trusted that God would set things right. I don't know how they did that, but they did. If you're a geek, there's a good chance you've got a wild and creative imagination. Mine, I can say, goes to work in overdrive when I think about the future. And that results in a mix of dreams and fears that I either set my heart on or that I just spend time worrying about. I dream about accomplishing certain things or getting that elusive, undefined amount of recognition and appreciation that I vainly pursue, or I fear that something terrible will happen to my boys or my wife or to me. So I catch myself now and then and say, Franson, why is your mind going there? This doesn't do you a bit of good. I think many of us geeks like to be in control. Maybe we've been hurt or mistreated in a way that makes us want to retreat to solitude or other environments that we have more control over. And we can also convince ourselves that dreaming or worrying about the future will help us control it in some way. My wife calls me paranoid boy because I just, like, think of all these terrible things that could happen and how I should prepare for them, you know? If my life is kind of lacking direction or something, you know, then I'll spend time kind of dreaming about the future and that can be very good. Absolutely. You know? But sometimes I'll have a tendency to cling to a dream when in fact I should really just be more aware of what's really going on in my life and what is really likely happening and what God is really likely steering me toward. I've met geeks that can dream so extensively and passionately about their future that their ability to see things as they are is damaged. They're not pursuing truth about themselves or about the future. They're unable to recognize themselves anymore, having lost all sense of their true strengths and weaknesses in favor of their idealized or feared vision of themselves and their future. Those dreams, those plans that we have that, you know what, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to write this novel. I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to, you know, create this online whatever, you know, I'm going to create this game, or I'm going to be a film this guy or whatever. You know, all these different dreams that we can have, they can be a source of comfort where we say, okay, well, that's in the future, but right now I'm on the road to that, and I've got this plan, and it's all going to work out because I've got it figured out in my head. I've got this vision in my head of how it's all going to work, and that can give us a sense of felt control. Likewise, when we fear about the future and we're like, okay, well, I got to prepare for this and this and this, and I got to avoid this and this and this, and then I'll be safe and things will be okay. And so we have this felt sense of control, over our lives. Not long ago, I even spoke to a geek who had convinced himself he needed to commit a small sin repeatedly, just a minor legal violation, because it would enable him to do something else repeatedly that was good and part of what he saw, I think, is God's purpose for his life. That's where we can go. That's what we can do to ourselves, is say, you know, is start thinking that certain sins are little and inconsequential, and it's okay that we do them if they serve this other thing that God would clearly say is good, you know? And I think that's all just out of a desire to get control over our lives, control over our futures, because we're not trusting God to advance things the way we want them to advance, or protect us from things we want him to protect us from, you know. But faith, as modeled in these verses, what I see here is trusting God with the future. Faith means giving up control, or what we tell ourselves is control, I should maybe say. Giving up that control or that feeling of control, and trusting that God's plans are good and they cannot be delayed or thwarted. Feedback, guys. Feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. You know, what should we keep? What should we change? We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we have to hear from you. To do that, you can send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.com. What the crap just happened here? Oh my gosh. I want to remind you guys again that we really need to fill the tech admin position for the CGC forums. There's no discussion moderating required in that role. We just need a committed person to troubleshoot technical stuff just for the forums and to find solutions for us when we need them. If you're interested, please email me. If you just have some questions, please email me. paeter@spiritblade.com. And guys, Extra Life is coming. I'm already getting excited. Go to agapegeekout.com. For more information. The main Extra Life event is November 7th, but I mean, you don't have to do the marathon. You don't have to do anything particularly on the 7th to be a part of the team. There are so many different ways you can be a part of the Christian Geek Central team. We're setting the goal for ourselves for just $100 per team member, which I think collectively, some maybe raised more, some raised a little less, some were like, you know, dead on or more, but we were pretty close to that last year. I think maybe one or two people didn't reach that were... That came into the game kind of late. But I mean, that's just kind of a goal. We're just going to say, okay, we'll put that out there, and if we do it, great, and if not, we'll just see what God does and just celebrate that, you know? It's really simple. I mean, if you don't want to do like a marathon, or you just don't have a time in, you know, November to, or anywhere in between now and then, to do something, some kind of an event or something, all you got to do is send out some emails, maybe put something on Facebook and Twitter a few times. And if you're not good at writing and stuff like that, between me and what Extra Life provides, we can get you hooked up with a form email that will feel personalized. They provide, you know, a few form emails that I'm like, this doesn't sound like me or anyone else I know for that matter. So I kind of rewrote the form email and stuff, but I could totally help you with that. But I just don't know the people that you know that you might send emails to, or that you might put something up on Facebook to let people know that, you know, you're doing this and wanting to raise awareness and funds for this, you know. So at the end of the day, I mean, that's just, all you got to do is like just know some people that I don't know and that makes you an awesome team member. So like I said, the marathon is just one way to participate on the Christian Geek Central team. If you want to do some kind of an event, but you're like, the marathon is like, that is insane, Peter. I don't get why anyone wouldn't want to do that to themselves. Then you could do it. You know, this is our Agape Geek Out event for the fall. And, you know, in the summer, Agape Geek Out, that's just having some people over for like a movie night or a game night or doing a bake sale or, you know, or tell people that you'll do some crazy stunt, you know, shave your head or do something. I don't know what. Wear a pink shirt if you're a person that never, ever, ever wears pink shirts. Maybe that would mean something to the people that you know if you said you would wear a pink shirt. But I mean, there's all kinds of ways you can do. I'd love to help you brainstorm and come up with ideas for that, you know. Anyway, I would just love for you guys to participate and be a part of this with me. And asking questions does not mean commitment. So I know I'm not covering all the details that you might have questions about. So ask me questions about it. That doesn't mean you're committing. Just ask me questions. paeter@spiritblade.com. All right. Well, let's see here. If you would, guys, promote the Maze Runner review that I just put up, or any of the videos that you find at youtube.com/Christian Geek Central. That just kind of helps us grow the Christian Geek Central community, get some more people connected to kind of the what we're talking about, the things that we're endeavoring to kind of think about and enjoy and celebrate and all that kind of stuff. So one way you can do that is just to go like, share, and or subscribe at youtube.com/Christian Geek Central to really any of the videos there. Of course, the Maze Runner review is the one I just put up. And then, of course, guys, as always, I want your voice. I want your interest to be a part of this podcast in Christian Geek Central. So whether you have just an idea for a segment or you want to be a part of the fun, or you want to find a, you know, we want to find a way to get you plugged in, or at least let your voice be heard. If you just have an opinion, you don't want to be a part of the show or whatever, but you just have an idea for a segment, let me know. And then I can start putting calls out for, you know, I was going to say Doctor Who, but we got some Doctor Who stuff going on that's kind of fun. But yeah, I don't know what in the world. See, it's all the stuff I don't know, so that you got to tell me that you want more of. So for more info, just email me at paeter@spiritblade.com. Have I said .net at all this episode? I don't think so. I've just been reading from my script and it says .com every time now. .com. Hey, Talk Like a Pirate Day and Hobbit Day, I think, are the same day. Are they both the 22nd? I don't know. I've got a note here that says that Talk Like a Pirate Day, 22nd, Hobbit Day. So, wouldn't that be cool if they were the same day and then you could, like, talk like a pirate hobbit? I don't know what that would sound like. Kim Wiki, let's put you on that. I want to know what a... Well, she's our resident Tolkien expert. So I know you might not be a pirate expert, Kim, but next segment, that's my challenge, is give me what sounds like... Oh my gosh, I'm smoking crack. I need to end this. Stay tuned for Farscape Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 310 to start from the beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, oh my gosh, there's so many TV premieres that are, you know, of nerd interest that are coming out this week. Minority Report, Limitless, Heroes Reborn. There was even one or two others that were kind of like maybe geek interest for me, but I just like I don't have time. I don't even know if I'm going to get to all three of these. That's three different shows. I don't know if I'm going to be able to come up with reviews or whatever on all three. I have no idea, but I'm going to try and to talk about all three of those: Minority Report, Limitless, and Heroes Reborn. And then we're going to hear about some Doctor Who, and not from me. Sorry, guys, I'm not your Doctor Who guy, but David Arrington's going to be back with some more Doctor Who stuff. And then I'm going to look at the question, you know, is geek entertainment among the silly myths that the Bible warns us to avoid? Have we all just been wasting time being a part of a community called Christian Geek Central? Boy, aren't you on the edge of your seat just waiting to find out? Till then, check out SpiritBlade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you. I mean you, Mr. Mrs. Meantime, thanks so much for I went off script. Thanks so much for making time for the show. I hope you have a great week and that you join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast. Truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Prepare for immediate starburst.
All right, so that was Farscape Season 4, Episode 403, What Was Lost, Part 2. And, John was captured by the peacekeepers, and that was a great bit at the beginning. I mean, he was rescued from the water, you know, and Dargo and Shiana were there, and they were like, okay, now when we send you back to the peacekeepers, you got to look like you had an injury, you know, can you handle that, you know? And he's like, yeah, I can handle that. Dargo's, you sure? He's like, yeah, I'm sure. Okay, you're sure? You know, he's like, yeah. And then he tongue lashes him, and, you know, John's like, you best, you know, almost says, you bastard, you know, as he's going unconscious. I mean, that was just such a great kind of like bromance moment. I just love the relationship between those two characters. The other laugh that I got was when, you know, John tied up Graeza, who thought he was under the effects of her cleavage sweat. And when he'd shot, you know, up the thing in his nose that kind of made him immune to the effects temporarily. I mean, he was, yeah, he was just like, you like that, don't you? You like it like that. And he swats her on the butt, you know, and it's just like, it was so funny because she was, you know, as an audience, as the audience knows at this point that he's not under her control, and she's smiling and she's just accepting being swatted and being tied up, and and he's just toying with her. Yeah, it's a good show. Okay, so at the end of the episode, you know, they've got the probes get reactivated, and this ancient race is, who was apparently frozen in time, is now reawakened, and they're not even aware that time has passed. And so Jewel decides she's going to stay behind and get them caught up and help them and stuff. You know, it's interesting. Last episode and this episode, suddenly Jewel is like this archaeologist. She's really into archaeology, and apparently she has a history with archaeology and stealing artifacts. And, you know, it's like suddenly they just really quickly introduced, you know, these extra facets to her character. And by the end of this two-episode story arc, she had grown up quite a bit and kind of, like, had a, you know, a change in who she was, and kind of a maturing, I think, and a humbling, you know. And, you know, that was, it was welcome. I'm glad they did it, but, I mean, it definitely felt rushed. And I haven't read anything that would confirm this, but I am under the impression that Jewel was just not a popular character, and this is just them getting her off the series prematurely because she wasn't working out, you know. I think this is the fastest turnaround for anybody that has, that's like been on the cast and then like was on the ship and then was off the ship, except for maybe Stark. But that guy, he just kind of comes and goes. I think when all is said and done, he will have been in definitely more episodes, even just as a member of the ensemble cast, more episodes than Jewel. I could be wrong about that, but it feels like, and maybe that's just me because I hate Jewel. I mean, this is the episode she was most likable in, but I mean, she also ceases to be really interesting to me the more likable she gets. So, like I said before, catch 22 with me and Jewel. So now she's left behind, and I think it's not the last we're going to see of her. I'll just leave it at that, but I mean, she's not part of the ensemble cast going forward. I think Sokozu, I was going to mention this last time, but I didn't want to spoil the fact that Jewel was leaving too early. I think Sokozu is kind of like Jewel 2.0 or Jewel Take 2. You know, like we want to introduce, I really don't know. This is just kind of like some observations. Like, I can't help but notice they both have red hair. You know, it's like, you know, let's get another redhead on here, another female character with a strong personality, but let's make this one less annoying and not entitled and more capable. And let's put less Play-Doh on her face so that she's potentially more attractive, you know? That's just what it seems like to me, you know, it's just kind of weird how that worked. Because now suddenly Jewel's gone. There was just a little bit of overlap between the two characters. And Sokozu is now part of the ensemble cast, you know. And I do like Sokozu better, you know. I think she's more intriguing. She's more mysterious, what she's capable of, her motives. She's just a lot more of an interesting character that I'm like, I want to know what makes her tick, what motivates her, you know. She seems very self-centered, like Jewel does, I mean, like all the characters, I mean, you know, with few exceptions on Farscape, they're all very self-centered. But she's not, and she even has a sense of entitlement like Jewel does, but she's not like a pretty princess, you know, that's pouting and, you know, she is very capable, you know? So anyway, much more interesting character. When Scorpius got shot and I was watching this for the first time, I was like, no, because you see, he's shot from behind and it explodes out the front of his chest. You're like, he's dead. He's got to be dead, you know? And I don't think this is a spoiler to say that we probably haven't seen the last of Scorpius, even though he said, don't let them bury me, and they bury him anyway. You know, you got to admit, that's kind of a really insane way to have that character exit the series. So, you know, I think it's not a spoiler to say that, you know, you can count on seeing Scorpius again. But it was also nice to see that, like, he seemed to be, like, very much himself when he was down in that pit. He was like a dog and stuff like that, and then they shot him, and then he falls in the pit, and just moments later, he has the presence of mind to tell Sokozu, say Skurnak, it'll save you, and then follows up by saying, don't let them bury me. And those are great moments for Scorpius. And for me, as a Scorpius fan, I think that Scorpius is possibly the best villain in geek fiction, in any medium, I think. I think he tops Darth Vader. I think he tops them all, in my opinion. Scorpius is the greatest villain. He's fantastic. I remember Wizard did a list of like 100 best villains of, you know, sci-fi, fantasy, and stuff like that. He wasn't even on the list, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me, these people. Ugh. But anyway, so it's like, okay, so what does that say? That says to me, he was freaking playing along with whatever Graeza wanted because he realized, okay, I'm not in a good position to directly oppose her. So I've got to just wait for my time. And it just shows, as we know to be true of Scorpius, that he is willing to be subservient. He is willing to behave as though he is broken. He's been here before, you know? And so to see him in that broken state as like a lapdog, you know, that was rough to see him like that. But then when I see this moment, I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I remember back to his origin story, and I'm like, oh my gosh, he's playing all of them. He's playing all of them. He's freaking brilliant. And he's not so prideful that he won't totally debase himself to reach his goals, you know? And I don't think the same can be said of Graeza. She is inferior. She is an inferior villain to Scorpius. And, you know, as I was watching, you know, this as a original viewer, I imagine myself, I can't remember that far back, but I can imagine myself thinking, you know, Graeza is hosed. I mean, the whole universe is hosed if Scorpius wants it. I mean, this guy, you know, they might be presenting Graeza as the ultimate villain right now. And, you know, maybe Scorpius is or isn't done hunting down John. I'm not sure what his motives would be for it now. But, oh man, you do not screw with Scorpius. All right, so they're off in Lola, which is Dargo's ship, named after an abbreviated version of his wife's name. And they are looking for Moya, still hoping to reconnect. Again, 3 episodes in, and we still haven't reconnected. But the old Leviathan is dead, and you know, you got to wonder how long are they going to be cramped in this little ship that Dargo has. Well, we'll see as we get into the next episode. Lava's a many-splendored thing.